Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There was a question yesterday, or a question sent to me from Vishnukanta Prabhu. Here in 50... Yes, Prabhu? Oh, dear. If you give me the computer case, it's in there. The bag that I have my computer in. In 56.2, there's discussion how in answer to Purvapaksha complaining that we don't see a complete description of the nine topics that clarify the tenth topic of the supreme truth, the Ashraya. And the answer given is that sometimes these topics are described directly in literal words, and sometimes the explanations are implied but as the purport of the narration. Vishnukanta Prabhu asked me to give some examples. It's simple. For example, in the ninth canto is teaching us renunciation under the category of mukti. Liberation is one kind of annihilation. Or mukti is a separate topic. So liberation is achieved by knowledge and renunciation. We have to learn for the sake of becoming detached from material life and able to become fully Krishna conscious, we have to become detached from material things. So renunciation is taught, but not so much explicitly. There are many narrations, especially in the ninth canto, of how demigods suffer so many complications of material life, how they're quarreling with one another. Brihaspati's wife is kidnapped by Soma and so on. So these stories are just being presented as history, but from them we learn the purport of renunciation, although the renunciation is not taught directly. So there are many examples like that. Okay? So we move into the 11th file. I'm waiting. We have one more question. Let me look at this for a minute. Really? Bartram, date of the 10th. Well, okay, I may have to... Okay, what was it? Yes.
There's four arguments about the existence of the spirit soul, about the spirit soul being spiritual. This is in text 55, I think. 50.
Yes.
Let me see, take a look. Well, he summarized them. No, 55.
55 summarizes them.
Yeah, summarizes it. And says... Okay, the first proceeds from the distinction between what comes and what goes and what is the ultimate ground of both coming and going. Okay, and then there's this second one and this third one, which more or less seems the same.
Yes.
Please explain them. The second proceeds from the distinction between the seer and the seen.
Yes.
And the third proceeds from the distinction between the witness and the witnessed.
Oh.
It seems like seer, seen, witness, witness.
Yeah, but the witness is that living entity in deep sleep when there's nothing to perceive. There is no seen in deep sleep. What the witness perceives in deep sleep is, I didn't see anything. So that is something different. They're both consciousness because we're dealing with showing that the conscious being is different from matter. So there's an element of consciousness is present in all four examples, all four proofs. But the third proof is that even when there isn't anything to see, the soul is conscious as the witness. The third one, how is it phrased? The contrast between witness?
In this witness.
The witnessed. Well, what's witnessed is the absence of any objects. I didn't perceive anything, is what he witnesses. So that's different than perceiving objects is witnessing the absence of objects. It's different.
It says the witness and the witness, according to the opinion of Saint Latorre.
According to what?
To the opinion of Saint Latorre's.
Okay. So it's just similar, but it's involving not involving any objects.
And the other question is 56.
If the spirit soul was only a perceiver of objects, then you might say that his consciousness is actually belongs to the object as well as the subject. You know, why are you saying the subject is conscious? Why not the objects are conscious? But you can isolate the subject without any object, and he's still conscious. So that makes it adds that element to it.
And in 56.1, you translate, well, there's the verses atrasagovisakascha ityadihi that are quoted in your translation of the second one, second verse. To delimit the meanings of the 10th topic, the great sages describe the qualities of the other nine in this work. They do this by direct statement and by implication.
Is this my translation or is it Prabhupada's original translation?
No, because Prabhupada's translation, he gives three ways.
Oh, okay.
You just give two. And
yeah, I think Prabhupada takes anjasa as a third way.
Directly. By direct statement? And by implication. You say just by direct statement, by implication, and he says...
Okay, I'm following Sridhar Swami on this, and I think Jiva Goswami also paraphrases Sridhar Swami or quotes him here. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, you see the last sentence in 56.2. Atak aha shutena shutya kantyoktyayava stutyadi staneshu anjasa. So Jiva Goswami puts Shrutena, Anjasa is just a modifier of Shrutena. Mm-hmm. So I just followed that. You know, I have to modify Prabhupada's translations in order to follow Jiva Goswami's explanation. Okay, that's not disagreeing with Prabhupada. It's just, you know, there are different ways to interpret the same words. But I have to give Jiva Goswami's interpretation because the verse is going to be explained by Jiva Goswami his way. And that's how he does it. He has two things, and Anjasa goes with and modifies Shrutena, and Artena is the second thing.
I know this is going off the topic, but is it possible to give an explanation of how this is done according to Prabhupada's translation, like Vedic inference, direct explanation, and summary explanation?
What are the three according to Prabhupada?
By Vedic inference, Shrutena. Mm-hmm. Artena, by direct explanation. And it says Anjasa, summary. By summary.
I don't know what summary means. I wonder if by summary he means purport. I don't know. I'd have to see. Maybe Prabhupada in his purport explains what he means by that. Okay, I can't really say without thinking about it. Okay, you can. If you want to submit that as a question, we can. I can look at it tonight. Okay, you want to write it down? Send it. There's something else here dated the 10th. Okay, some comments. I'll look at this later about Vishwanath's commentary on the Gita. Oh, that's not from this class anyway. Okay. All right, we move into the next energy at 57. Yeah. Okay, I think we understand the context that there are 9 topics of a Mahapurana. Bhagavatam is the real Mahapurana. And the 9 first topics are meant to, the word is to purify, but the ashraya doesn't need to be purified. Our understanding of the ashraya has to be purified. In order to clarify the understanding of the 10th topic, the ashraya, the Bhagavatam presents the other 9. So now we'll look at the Bhagavatam's definition of each of those 10 topics. It's done in 2 places. In the last chapter of the 2nd canto, 10th chapter, and also in the 12th canto, there's another list of definitions of actually a slightly different list of 10 topics. They're counted differently. A couple of them are merged and another one is added. So Jiva Goswami is going to look at both of these lists and explanations of the 10 lists and definitions of the 10 topics. First, we look at the description in the 2nd canto. So, tadevam dashamam vishpashtaitum tesham dashanam vyutpadikam saptashlokim aha. 7 verses. Bhutamatinviyadiyam janma sarga udaritaha brahmano gunafaisham yad visarga paurushaksmitaha bhutani kadini matrani cha shabdadini indriyani cha di shabdena mahad ahankarao gunanam vaishamyat purinamat brahmanak parameshwarat kartur bhutadinam janma sargaha purusho vairajo brahma tatkritak paurushas chara chara sargo visarga ityartaha. So Jiva Goswami is paraphrasing the shloka as is normally done in a commentary. I actually want to check and see if this is actually, without saying it, whether it's copying this from Sridhar Swami. Let me just take a quick check. What's the verse number? 29 what? 210.3. Okay, let me check Sridhar Swami, just out of curiosity. Yeah, not exactly, but yeah, most of it's right out of Sridhar Swami, and he doesn't even say so. Yeah, that's why even though there's only about 220 times when he quotes Sridhar Swami and says he's doing it, there's many other times when he's taking from Sridhar Swami without mentioning it. That's a question. Oh, this is also Kramasandarbha. Okay. This is also borrowed again into the Kramasandarbha. Anyway, it's a good explanation. Why give a different one if you already have the good explanation? Okay, translation. Therefore, to elucidate the 10th topic, 7 verses are spoken to define all 10. The first verse reads thus. That is Jatavadi Maharaj's addition. You know, he wants to help the reader. We put it in square brackets. I don't think you have it there in the older copy. Anyway, this is how we edit it. John Wainwright wants to help the reader orient them a little bit, so we take the liberty of adding a few notes in brackets. The first verse reads thus: "The generation of the physical elements, of the subtle objects of perception, of the senses, and of consciousness is called Sarga, the primary creation. It results from the Supreme Lord's disturbing the equilibrium of the modes of nature. The secondary creation effected by Lord Brahma is called Visarga." So we have definition of two of the first topics. Now, the paraphrase based on Sridhar Swami's commentary: "The Bhutas are the elements such as ether. The matras are sound and so on, the subtle objects of perception. The word di, consciousness, here indicates both the mahatattva and the false ego. Also mentioned here are the senses. When the modes by transformation are disrupted from their equilibrium, the creation occurs. The generation of the Bhutas and so on, done by Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead," because the word Brahmano is there, and it's understood to be the ablative, but it could be masculine or neuter. Here we're talking about, according to Sridhar Swami, according to Jiva Goswami, this is neuter Brahman. Brahman, okay, Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Brahmana is neuter, but it's glossed as Parameshvara, masculine. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's called Sarga. So the Sarga creation comes from Lord Vishnu. Continuing, "And the creation of the moving and non-moving creatures is called Visarga. This secondary creation is called Paurusha because it is done by Brahma, the creator, Purusha, who is related to the universal body." BBT standard, it may not appear in all the older books, but our current standard is that when the Purusha is the Purusha incarnation of Vishnu, then it's capital P. But here it's Lord Brahma, so he's a lowercase p. And we're talking about the living entity as Purusha, and we use that term, it's lowercase. All right. Well, you want to be BBT editors, you have to learn these things. Okay? Oh, yeah, you're super lowercase. No, we don't have that. Okay, 57.2. Stittir Vaikuntha Vijaya Poshanam Tadanugraha Manvantarani Saddharma Utaya Karma Vasana Avataranucharitam Hades Chasyanuvartinam Pumsam Ishakata Prokta Nanakyanupabrimita. Yeah, this is right out of Sridhar Swami, what's coming up. He continues his explanation. Vaikuntash Bhagavato Vijaya Shrishtanam Tadtan Maryada Palain Otkarshat Stitihi Stanam Tatak Stiteshu Svabhakteshu Tasyanugraha Poshanam Manvantarani Tantan Manvantarastitanam Manvadinam Tadanugrahitanam Satam Charitani Tanyeva Dharmas Tad Upasanakyak Sad Dharmak Tatrivas Tatao Nana Karma Vasana Utayaha Satav Eva Hadir Avataranu Charitam Asyanuvartinam Chukata Ishanukata Prokta Ityartaha. Continuing the seven verses. The word maintenance, stiti, means the victory of Lord Vaikuntha, and sustenance, poshana, is his special favor. Reigns of Manus, Manvantara, indicates the principles of transcendental religion. And creative urges, uti, refers to intentions to engage in material activities. Topics about the Lord, Ishanukata, are the pastimes of the Supreme Lord's incarnations and faithful devotees. Pastimes that serve as the topics for various narrations. Here, so Ishanukata is not just stories about the history of the Lord's incarnations, but also about his devotees. Here, maintenance, stiti, or stana, refers to the victory. The original verse that listed the ten. Oh, okay, stana. So why? Was stana atravasargo visharga stana? Yeah, the word was stana in the beginning of that chapter 10 of the second canto. It was called stana, and then when each of them are defined, it's called stiti. But those two words are synonymous. So here, maintenance, stiti or stana, refers to the victory of the Supreme Lord of Vaikuntha, the Supreme Lord Vaikuntha, his super excellence in maintaining the prescribed status of each of his creatures. Among all thus maintained, his devotees receive his special favor, or sustenance, poshana. Reigns of Manus indicate the histories of the Manus and other saintly persons, saintly persons who live during the various Manvantaras and are specially favored by the Lord. These histories constitute the principles of transcendental religion, because these histories offer the Dharma of meditation on the Supreme Lord. Within the same context of stiti, maintenance, creative urges refers to desires to perform various kinds of fruitive work. Also included within stiti are historical accounts of the deeds of Lord Hari's incarnations and followers. These accounts are called Isha Anukata. The activities of the Lord and his devotees are connected with the maintenance of the universe. He maintains the universe by his pastimes, his displayed in his avatars. Those pastimes have also the purpose of his own pleasure and his loving reciprocations with his devotees, but simultaneously he manages to maintain the universe by these pastime incarnations. Okay, last part of the Anuchet. Nirodho syanu shayanam atmanak sahashakti bihi muktir hitvanyata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi stityantaram chatmano jivasya shakti bi swapari bi sahasya harer anushayanam hari shayananu katatvena shayanam Nirodha ityartaha. Tatra harer shayanam papancham prati drishti nimilinam jivanam shayanam tatra laya iti geyam. To drive a nirodhe anyata rupam avidya dyastam agatvadikam hitva surupena vyavastitir muktihi. The lying down of the soul, along with his energies, his own energies, after the Lord lies down, is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation, Nirodha. The word liberation, mukti, refers to the soul's giving up all other identities to become situated in his true identity. After the time of maintenance comes the so-called annihilation, the lying down of the soul, the jiva, along with his own energies, upadis, following Lord Hari, in other words, after Lord Hari lies down. So what are the energies of the jiva? Those are actually the material energies that he assumes in his false material identity. So they're called upadis. They're not really his innate energies, but the capacities, powers that he superficially has access to in his material life. So those are his upadis, or false coverings, superficial identifications. So when the jiva has to go to sleep, he takes all his upadis with him and goes to sleep inside Lord Vishnu. At the time of the universe's annihilation. Continuing. Specifically, Lord Hari's lying down means his closing his eyes to the material creation. And the jiva's lying down refers to his entering into the Lord. Within that state of annihilation, the jiva's giving up his other forms, the ignorance and so on imposed on him by the power of illusion, and his being established in his true identity is called liberation. Well, okay, within that state of annihilation, that doesn't mean while he's asleep. I think I should correct that. It means that this is a special kind of annihilation. It's the atyanta, so within the topic of annihilation, not within the... You got what I mean? It's not that liberation is achieved in between creations while you're asleep inside Mahavishnu. That's the time to get liberation. No, it just means that there are four different kinds of annihilation. Annihilation of the universe is one, and another kind of annihilation is the jiva's liberation. It's the annihilation of his own, of his individual material existence. Okay, I'm almost sure that's what we mean, tatra. Well, I didn't make the correction. I'm just suggesting that we're really talking about the topic of annihilation, not the condition of sleeping inside Mahavishnu. So I have to decide what to say to make that clear. Commentary. This Anuchet presents four verses out of the seven, the first four, in which Shukadeva Goswami defines the first nine topics of the Bhagavatam. Other Puranas give attention to these same topics. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Shukadeva carefully evolves all secondary supporting discussions toward understanding the tenth topic, the personality of Godhead. In other words, you may find other Puranas that technically discussed the same 10 topics and therefore can be called Mahapuranas. And there is a standard list of 18 Mahapuranas. But Jiva Goswami, I think he's still going to do it. He hasn't done it yet. He's going to argue that only the Bhagavatam is actually in the truest sense a Mahapurana. That Vishnu Purana and other so-called Mahapuranas talk about these topics but not in the same thorough, systematic way. Here it's pointed out that the Bhagavatam focuses the discussion of all other topics toward the understanding of the ultimate topic of the ashraya. Other Puranas may not do this. It discusses all the topics, but it doesn't have that same focus. Discussion of the Supreme Lord, but not such a systematic and perfect discussion that will actually teach you pure devotional service. Okay, continuing. Lord Vishnu begins the process of universal creation by glancing upon his external energy. The glance of the Lord which bears time, the sleeping jivas, and the jivas' individual karmic dispositions impels Maya to evolve from herself the elements of matter from subtle to gross. This process of unfolding begins with the Mahatattva, the primeval mixture of the three material modes, and ends with fire, water, and earth. Included among these evolved elements are the sensory faculties and the basic objects of perception, tanmatras, corresponding to each sense. The sense of hearing, for example, has a subtle existence of its own, apart from the inert physical apparatus of the ear. And the subtle object known as shabda, sound, is something distinct from the agitations of molecules in the air and other media that is measured physically as specific sounds. There's an abstract existence of sound, as apart from particular sounds, manifest sounds. We were reading about that in the Alankara Kostaba, of Shabda existing as Dwani and Varna. It has its abstract or mental existence, and then it has its physical, concrete existence, the same sound on different levels. So the Tanmatra is the abstract or subtle object of perception. That comes first. First the object and then the sense to perceive the object. The creation is of the Tanmatra first. Sound comes first and then the ether in the order of creation. No, it's actually sound and then ether. It may sometimes be said ether first, but elsewhere it's said the sound comes first. Various presiding demigods, assume responsibility for managing each of the created elements. But these demigods cannot effectively coordinate anything until Lord Vishnu personally enters each element to provide direction. The Lord also expands himself separately into each of the million egg-like universes as the Samashti Supersoul, Garbhodakshai Vishnu. In this way, the primary creation is presided over by the Supreme Lord directly with Maya and the demigods acting in subordinate roles. So this is the first phase of creation, directed by Lord Vishnu himself. The Lord delegates the later phase of creation to Brahma, the first jiva in the universe. Brahma is born from the lotus stem growing from Garbhodakshai, Vishnu's navel, and this lotus stem is also the location of the Virat Purusha, or universal form, which contains the prototype forms of all planets and all species of life. Brahma is the jiva soul presuming ownership of the Virat body, and Garbhodakshai Vishnu is the supersoul of that universal body. Thus Brahma owes to Lord Vishnu not only his birth, but also his recollection of the knowledge required for engineering the universe. The Supreme Lord, having arranged the creation of the universe, personally directs its maintenance as long as the universe exists. Lord Vishnu is always victorious, always self-evidently the supreme controller, because he supports the entire creation effortlessly, without lifting a finger or suffering the anxiety of management. He maintains everything through the agency of the demigods and sages, his faithful servants. And he personally involves himself in the material world exclusively for his devotees, whom he repeatedly favors by appearing in his various incarnations. The mission of Lord Vishnu's avatars is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear, millennium after millennium. Commenting on this verse, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada writes, as far as the atheists are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees who are always harassed by the demons. Dharma samstapana, the periodic re-education of human civilization in spiritual principles, is also effected by the Supreme Lord with the help of his servants, in particular the Manus. Other demigods and sages living in the material world usually cannot have the Supreme Lord's personal association. Even Brahma cannot meet the Lord whenever he would like. When the demigods need to request the Lord's descent to protect them, Brahma must sit on the far shore of the ocean of milk and appeal to the unseen Lord in silent meditation. But since the Manus perform special service for the Lord by teaching the standards of religious life to human beings, Lord Vishnu is pleased to incarnate and personally reciprocate with each Manu in turn during their individual reigns. 14 in every day of Brahma. Thus the Supreme Lord helps each Manu establish Sadharma, religious principles. The real purpose goes on and on here. The real purpose of the material creation is to give the jivas an opportunity to try fulfill their I think there's a mistake there. A word missing. Try and fulfill. Try to fulfill. Let me just mark it. Atheism is spelled? Hold on. Hold on a second. I have to type this. Okay, what is that? As far as the atheistic, what's wrong with that? Oh, Prabhupada has atheistic, right? Okay, I read it wrong, but it's correct here on the paper. Okay. I'm sorry? I don't know. It sounds awkward to me. I'll check with Jayadwaita Brunch whether he wants to do that. Anyway, it says here, to give the jivas an opportunity to try fulfill, it doesn't sound right, their desires to control and enjoy. The creation of this world satisfies none of the Lord's own desires, other than his desire to reform his rebellious dependents. Every material manifestation reflects the specific desires of some living entities. Vaishnavacharyas, in their commentaries to Srimad Bhagavatam, explain that no material body is produced until some conditioned soul wants to possess it. Even the subtle aggregates of the material elements are not created by Maya until particular demigods are each willing to accept one of them as his own body. As already mentioned, the remnants of past desires accompany each jiva within the glance of Mahavishnu into a new creation. Those same desires carry the jiva through any number of bodies, demigod, human, animal, and plant, in the regions of earth, heaven, earth, and hell. This repeated birth and death, samsara, continues for each soul until he finally takes shelter of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, thus giving up material desires and rediscovering his eternal spiritual desires. Although the personality of Godhead's avatars coincidentally assist in the work of universal maintenance, in reality the Supreme Lord, unlike the conditioned residents of this world, is not obliged to work. All his activities are free play, lila. And whatever the Lord does in the course of his appearances, with or without a discernible purpose, is of interest for talks among Vaishnavas. Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations about many of the Lord's avatars, and the pastimes of the source of all avatars, Sri Krishna, occupies the entire 10th canto. Nearly one-third of the Bhagavatam's text. Every time the Supreme Lord appears in this world, he does so in response to the desires of his devotees. No description of the Lord's leelas is complete, therefore, without descriptions of the character and activities of his devotees. Complementary to the topic of universal creation is that of the process in reverse, universal destruction. Nirodha, in its primary sense, is the annihilation that occurs at the end of the universe, when even Brahma dies, and all the remaining jivas enter the body of Mahavishnu for a prolonged period of dormancy. Srimad Bhagavatam's 12th canto also describes three other types of annihilation. The partial destruction of the universe at the end of each day of Brahma, the ongoing decay of everything material, and the final annihilation, the soul's liberation from the cycle of birth and death. In Shukadeva Goswami's list of the Bhagavatam's topics, liberation is a separate subject. One second. But it is not the final topic. It is not the final and most important. Much more important than liberation, in Shukadeva's view, is devotion to the foundation of all being. Impersonalists earn an inferior kind of liberation by their painful disciplines aimed at artificially merging into the effulgent light from the Supreme Person's body. But as defined here, the true meaning of liberation is to give up all false material ideas of self and revive one's original Vaishnava identity. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the exemplar of perfect bhakti, prayed, Nadanam najanam nasundarim kovitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhaktir ohoi tuki tvayi. O Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruit of activities described in flowery language. All I want, life after life, is unmotivated devotional service to you. Shikshastika 4. In other words, Lord Chaitanya says, I do not want anything material, nor do I care if I am reborn again and again in this world. But I am not altogether devoid of desire. I have one demand. I must be born each time in the company of your pure devotees. Even devotional service mixed with knowledge or material success will not satisfy me. So you note, I'm using Prabhupada's translation here. Someone could reinterpret it and you know, take kavitam in the more literal sense, poetic ability to the power of a poet, kavita, poetic inspiration. But there's no need to here. Jiva Goswami doesn't give an explanation. I just inserted this as a quote. So we don't have to change Prabhupada's translation to fit Jiva Goswami's commentary. No need to change it. I just leave it as it is. You can take that as a principle. You're writing a new book. There may be a verse that Prabhupada has translated. You may need to translate it differently, but only if necessary to fit the context. Otherwise, use Prabhupada's translation. Okay. So, this is the way that Jiva Goswami is proceeding to approach the understanding or basic definition of what is the ashraya, what is the tattva. This is the tattva sandarbha, or maybe you can call it the ashraya sandarbha also. It's about the tattva and the ashraya are the same thing. The supreme the ultimate ground of all being, the one absolute truth from which everything that's created comes, everything that's not created comes, as his expansions, who maintains everything. That's the ashraya, the shelter. It is the prime topic of the Bhagavatam. We see that one third of the whole text is dedicated to the pastimes of Krishna, who is the supreme ashraya. And many other chapters are dedicated to his avatars, who are also the ashraya, his expansions. The Bhagavatam chooses to describe the material creation and our analysis of the material creation and the history of creation through different generations as a way of approaching the ashraya, the supreme truth. These are typically Puranic topics. Topics of universal history, cosmic history. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is very typically a Purana, It's dealing with Puranic topics. But this is one effective way to bring us to understanding of the absolute truth. There could be other ways, but the Bhagavatam does it Puranically by giving us history of the universe and the population of the universe. It works. It's very effective because we are residents of the material world. So we're interested in the news of the material world because this is our place. So the Bhagavatam appeals to that interest, our interest in material creation, to train us up in beginning to understand what is beyond the material creation, the higher reality. Okay, so this is a very basic survey of the style and method and contents of the Bhagavatam. And how the Bhagavatam presents the Ashraya Tattva will be elaborated in the second, third, and fourth Sandarbhas. Okay, so we're reaching the end of the Tattva Sandarbha. With this, we finish the discussion of the Tattva Sandarbha. A brief outline of the topics of the Bhagavatam and how they focus in the final topic, the Ashraya. Okay, I think we'll stop here. I need to spend a little time to prepare for the Kavya class. I'm a little behind in my preparation. So. What will? After? Well, when we get to the end, we'll continue into the second Sandarbha. How many days it takes, yeah. 63.6. And it's not, the rest of it is not too complicated philosophically, so we shouldn't get bogged down. Okay. The book will be what? It may take up to another year. We'll have it ready in a few months, but then the BBT book production line is busy with other books, so I may not get first priority. Okay, so stop here. Thank you. Om Glorisha Srila Prabhupada. Shri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.